But I also believe that it takes a tremendous amount of emotional stamina to be able to produce that. And I, from what I see, most people don't have that emotional stamina to begin with. And can you suggest, I personally that women need a lot of support in order to achieve that, but maybe you have some suggestions on how to achieve that?
The question is that brought people do not have the emotional stamina to achieve this type of ideal situation, or else they have a great difficulty in tapping into it. And what possible suggestions are there for people to get the chizuk and support they need in order to stay the course? Okay, so here is an idea which is even wilder than what we've been saying till now. What this really needs is not hard work in the conventional sense of hard work. Hard work in the conventional sense of hard work, the whole concept of hard work is based on when you encounter resistance. The greater the resistance you encounter, the greater the energy you have to expend to accomplish your goal, your ideal, which is encountering whatever the resistance is. Now, when you're trying to experience an ideal world in which there is no resistance, okay, where everything exists in perfect harmony and perfect unity, everything is part of one truth and one reality. So the idea is not to struggle and fight and work hard and expend energy. The idea is to let go. It's more about letting go than it is about working hard. Now, it's hard. I said, like everything else, it's work. And you get results as you work. Because the problem is that we have inner resistance to letting go. Our inner resistance to letting go is sometimes stronger than our drive to do. Okay, because we have been dealing with, for thousands of years, a conflict-oriented situation. And that was our job. David HaMelech was supposed to go to war and chop all those people's heads off. That was his job to do. It was a real conflict and he had to fight it. Okay? And Shlomo, in his time, did not have to fight it. The point in our world is that we have to stop fighting. We have to stop seeing the world in an aggressive, some lingo, male-oriented aggression world, and realize that the true nature and the true character of the world in its present situation is feminine, passive acceptance type of a world. And it's an amazing concept. It's part of what Chassidus says, that in the time of the Geula, the woman is on top. Not as many people make the mistake and think that women are supposed to become masculine in the time of Geula. No. Women are supposed to retain their femininity exactly as it was, but femininity will be recognized as the ultimate virtue and the ultimate value. Not that women are going to start kicking people around, that's not the point. So the point, the whole idea is that what's needed today in order to achieve this type of unity, this type of sense of connectedness to God and to other Jews, is not by struggling to get it, but by letting it happen, letting it be, because that is the reality. And this is a whole other topic unto itself, that many people totally don't relate to the language of the Rebbe in the most recent sikhas about Mashiach. And because they don't relate to it, so people have different reactions of what to do with it. Some people say, it's not relevant because I don't understand it. Some people say, take out the parts of it they like and leave the parts they don't. But if you'll notice, the whole language of the Rebbe is a total shift from the traditional Hasidic language, which describes a person as distant from God and Geula, and how to cover the gap and the distance. And the Rebbe has changed the language and reversed it completely to the point that you're there already. You just have to let go. Stop resisting. Stop fighting. You're there already. You have that connection with God. You have that connection with your fellow Jews. Stop fighting it. Stop resisting it. Stop pulling yourself back into goals. And that is the key. This is one of the main keys to understanding all of those. The whole language of the Rebbe is a complete reverse of everything we know till now, because we're talking about letting go and accepting what is. And even those things that still need changing, to approach changing them not in a way of conflict, but in a way of acceptance. Okay.
Are you saying that just like Rebbe said, like Mashiach is here, and that mom, we just open our eyes? So the same concept we're talking about now with Shalom Bayis, that there's no more conflict. Just like Mashiach is here, there's no more galus. We don't, for a galus minded, that we're going to be with the old system.
Right.
So just like Ula is here, so there's no conflict. So just
right. Right. In other words, on a deeper level, what we're really saying here is that there is no conflict. It's not that we've reached a point where we know how to deal with conflicts in a whole new way. We've reached a point that there is no conflict. There exists only the perception of conflict. And what you have to do is alter your perceptions, and the conflicts will disappear. It's not that we're telling you, we're trying to tell you a whole new tool, a new invention on how to deal with conflict. To tell you how to recognize, how to experience the reality of no conflict. There is no conflict. What keeps people at odds with each other is the perception of conflict.
We're self-imposed conflict,
and
we're creating a conflict.
Right.
Where it doesn't
exist. Right.
I have no
reason. That's it. Okay, there's someone here that's...
Right.
Okay. I'm an extreme example of that. When anyone makes demands or criticizes or anything, I go into total withdrawal. And
I don't think it's unusual. I'm
right. Okay.
But I'm wondering, in a practical level, how if a person needs to make a request or express an expectation of this person in the time of need, and they need to, in what way can they frame it? Not having prepped it with this whole talk, you know,
go on
an hour and a half.
No. You see, I'm not going to fall into that trap. There's a little trap being set here. Well-meaning, but one second. No. What happens is like this. The question I was just asked, if there's a situation in which you're trying to get the other person to perceive that you're on their side, what could you say? How would you phrase your request? What could you say or do that would communicate that you're on the same side? And the answer to that question is nothing. You understand? When a person asks me for a phrase or an action, what they're asking me for is a technique. I want to tell you, there is no technique in the world that will convince someone that you're on their side. It's not a technique. It just is a risk. There's no technique. You can't, there's nothing you can do. I just want to tell you my experience, that every time I fall into the trap of trying to use a technique on someone that I'm being makarif, I think, oh, here's an opportunity, let me try out this technique. It always backfires. There are no techniques.
What if I don't really want a technique, but maybe what not to do, what is...
You want results.
Okay, so here we have to take the issue. Here we have to take the issue one step further. The question is, how do you communicate? How do you get this message? What makes this message get across? And what do you avoid doing to interfere with this message?
So I want to tell you that there's one thing that you really have to do, which is the scariest, and this is matnish letting go. This is like really jumping out of a plane without a parachute. And we're talking letting it all hang out, letting go. Okay? Letting go, real, real letting go is, if I could put myself in a place, objectively, in other words, I could stand back to the point where I say, I have a mission to do. Okay? Part of it is to try to encourage other people to do their mission. If, for some reason, the other person will not do the thing that I ask, personally, on an ego level, personally, I couldn't care less. I only care about the divine mission being accomplished. That is called, now this is like, I'm telling you, this is like letting go. The point, and this is what Chavar HaChassidus says, Dalai Lama says like this in Tanya, Dalai Lama says that the whole purpose that a person was sent on the world is to experience difficulties in Bani Chayu Mizrein, in children, in health, in your life, and in your parnas. A person was sent on the world to experience challenge and difficulty, and to test his faith. And now the Rebbe says, what is the proof of true faith? True faith is, I couldn't care less. If God does it, if this is what God wants, then this is the best, I don't care. Now, one second. So it sounds like you talk about like total zombies, robots, I don't care, whatever happens. No, we're talking about experiencing such a deep level of connectedness to God, such a total reliance on God, that everything he does is good, that I personally have no vested interest one way or another. Whatever God wants, that's it. That's what I want. So when you put yourself, okay, but again, it's not something you have to do. That's something you have to do. It's something you have to stop fighting. That's it. It happened. Accept it. If you experience, let me tell you something. If you experience that level of acceptance, meaning, I care very much that you should do this thing that I'm asking for you, from you, because I think that it is essential in our performance of our divine mission. But I personally, my ego will be completely unaffected if you say yes or no. Okay, you don't have to say that. If you're holding that, you don't have to tell me that. Because instinctively, what pushes me away is your ego. If you pull your ego out of the way in the communications, that comes through. There's no magic word to say. And there's no magic word to avoid saying. You could say it in the worst way, you could say it in the best way. If that ego is pushing, then I feel pressure and resistance and I pull back. If the ego is out of the way and I feel someone drawing me close, drawing me into the world of divine unity, then I don't push away, then I draw close.
That's interesting, and I agree with you, and it goes exactly opposite from what the conventional...
Right, it's exactly reverse of conventional wisdom.
You know, don't say you say phrase that I need...
Right, conventional wisdom says, express your needs. There's whole books, there's a lady that built herself up, a whole section of the self-help profession, teaching people how to ask for what they want. How to let your spouse know what you want. How to ask for what you want. And they go into excruciatingly gory detail, but the fact is, but that's it, it's a whole, she has a series of books and programs and videos and tapes and retreats and institutes, and it's all how to ask what you want. How to have your ego.
You can communicate it, you're just saying, pull your ego out when you do communicate.
Right.
But not to communicate.
Right.
No, sure, you have to commute. Sure, you have to connect. You have to connect.
It sounds like
just shut up.
Sure.
If your approach is that, that's
right.
How you're going to
Right. When I stop a person on the street and ask him to put on tefillin, okay, he will pick up, he will sense instantaneously if I am coming to him out of some ego fulfillment because I want to sign up for another guy and say, you know, or if I'm coming to him by putting my ego aside, and I'm, you know, and this is it, I'm out in the street not because I want to be here, because it does anything for me, but because I care about another Jew. They'll get that message. How fast they will respond to it? Some people might be threatened even by that initially, because it throws them off. It's scary to them, because it's not what they're used to. Sometimes people who are used to that you don't get anything for free in life, so when they feel like you're giving them too much, they get scared of that too. It takes them time to adjust, to realize you're giving too much and there is no price tag attached. And that's, you know, but that also is frightening for people who aren't used to it. It's initially might push them away. But ultimately, if you're conveying that message, ultimately there's nothing that can draw people close. I mean, beyond close. I mean, you can actually experience that kind of...
All of this makes sense, except for one thing. It has really nothing to do with at least my reality. I left my house at about 8 o'clock, and it's now 11:30, so that means 3.5 hours ago. Now, had my husband gone to a class 3.5 hours ago after Shabbos, when everybody was home, and it was a rainy day, nobody left the house, and I was home for 3.5 hours, he would come home and everything would be done. I promise you, when I walk in my house, everything will be exactly as I left it, and if not, there would be his dishes from whatever he did still waiting for me. So
therefore,
I didn't expect anything. I didn't say when I left, please clean it up, and if he would have left, he never would have said, please do it. Never. But I would have done it, and so he would have been out, had his fun, and come back and had nothing to do. Meanwhile, I would come back, having sat through all this and everything, walking into the same exact stuff, and I will automatically be, how come I have to go out and come back to still have to do
right.
all of this?
Right.
So when
and it's only going to get worse. It's only going to get worse, not better.
Huh?
And that's only going to escalate. It's never going to get better.
I'm just telling you that no matter how godly, and I come in and I say, I'm not going to say anything.
No. That's not.
Would never even enter his mind that he should
okay.
be doing it.
Okay.
Never. If I don't say,
let me explain to you something.
Would you do this?
Let me explain to you something. Unless a human being is completely unconscious, okay. There are a lot of things that enter his. One second. There are a lot of things that enter a person's mind that they have elaborate defenses, which signal them to avoid. In other words, if I'm in a situation where I feel that I am going to do a good turn for someone else, and they're going to really appreciate it, I might be inspired to do them a good turn. But if I, but what happens is when I'm in a kind of relationship where my mind says to me like this, hold on, one second. If I'm going to do everything, so now, first of all, I probably won't get too much appreciation or recognition for it. Second of all, now, the next time when I don't, if next time I don't do it, it's going to be even angrier. So what happens is the person, as long as people are thinking in this mode of what do I have to do, what I don't have to do, what could I get, what could I get away from doing, and so on and so forth, as long as people are still in that kind of mode, part of the defense which makes a person avoid undertaking things is that they know that if I do it once, if I give a finger, they're going to take a hand. Okay? But that's when I'm scared to give a hand. And the only reason I'm scared to give a hand is because I feel that it's my needs against your needs. But when I'm in a relationship where the thing I'd most like to do is give a hand, all I want to know is that when I give the hand, it will be accepted and appreciated for what it is, a hand. So what happens is that when we're in the negotiation mode, you ought to do this, you shouldn't do it. If you don't do it, then it means that you did, that you don't love me, you don't care about me, or you do, or you're oblivious, and you're insensitive, and this means all kinds of negative things about you. And if you do or don't do, it means all kinds of things about you. So the whole situation is built on conflict, and therefore, all the people, conflict doesn't necessarily mean fighting.
No,
conflict means,
I'm going to walk in, I know... I don't have any explanation to do it, and he's certainly not sitting there saying
do you have resentment?
Do you have resentment of what you projected was going to be when you get home?
No, I'm
yeah,
saying
you,
that
that's not
how
accept.
Do you change that maybe I would come home and something would be done without saying that it would be helpful? Without demanding, I'm not saying standing there with a stick and saying, you know, do this for me. I'm just saying if you don't say that it would make my life 100 times easier. I walked in and even saw one thing. I was away from home for like 12 days and I came home. I was away with the kids for 12 days and my husband was home. And I came home and a lawnmower, that a little toy lawnmower that my children were playing with, before we left, was still in the middle of the living room floor. He walked past it at least 1,000 times. He never, I swear, he did not say, I'm not putting it away on purpose for 12 days.
He didn't say. Nothing to do on purpose. I'm explaining to you how to.
But when I
I'm explaining to you how the mind works.
There, it's like, had I been here for 12 days and the lawnmower never moved.
I'm explaining to you how the human mind works. The human mind makes it its business not to notice what's irrelevant to it. Okay? We see billions of things going on around us a day. We filter. We filter what we see and what we notice and what we consider relevant to us. Okay? Right now, a person who does not see opportunities to make the lives of those around them easier, they're filtering them out. Okay? Their mind is filtering them out. It's not because men are from Mars and women are from Venus. That is not why he's filtering them out. The reason why a person who sees opportunities to do kindness with those around them and they filter it out is because they have a fear of the kindness becoming a demand. That's what they are terrified of. And therefore, instinctively, it's not a conscious thing. He doesn't say, Lord, no, I'm a little flawed. Gee, I think I'll leave it there. He doesn't say that. Okay? What he does is he filters that out because in his mind, there's a system which knows to avoid any type of situation which might lead to a slippery slope. Meaning that I'm going to get on a thing where there's going to be a whole new list of expectations and demands, and I can never get out of it.
I would never remember that it had been there. It doesn't make sense that...
Okay, so the fact is that the Navi tells us...
That doesn't make sense either, because...
The fact is that the Navi tells us that the thing that people are most afraid of is what ends up usually happening to them. Okay, the Pasuk says it about Rishayim, Megeras Rishayim Tivayana, that which the wicked are running away from, and they think that their wickedness will save them from, that is exactly what they're going to end up getting. So obviously we're not talking about wickedness here, but what happens is that part of the human system is that it's the things that you run away from that end up, that you think, out of fear, instead of dealing with them, it's those things that usually end up being your biggest problems. By building in a system which makes one afraid of getting into things that I won't be able to get out of, okay, and therefore filtering out certain things and not utilizing those opportunities, that ends up causing the person to get the thing that he was most afraid of. Being rejected because you're not living up to demands and expectations.
But naturally, men and women see things differently. What I think would help me and make my life easier is not what he sees would make my life easier.
Again, men and women. Men and women see things differently because men are walking into a relationship looking for what does a man need, and a woman is walking into a relationship looking for what does a woman need. But when both are walking into But when both walk into a relationship saying, what does God need, then it really doesn't matter how you look at things. If you'll see an opportunity, part of looking at the world through the eyes of what does God need means seeing another person's needs even when they're not your own, because they are your own.
It doesn't say in the Shulchan Aruch that you should wash the dishes sometimes. It doesn't say it. There's certain things
Again. The question is...
My personal me, as a person, not as a woman, not as a wife, not as a mother, what makes things easier for me, the only way another person can find that out is if I tell them.
Right.
So you need to tell somebody...
Right. Now I want to ask you a question. After having told them...
If you could do this, and the other, woman, if you could buy me hundreds of thousands of dollars of jewelry, it will not make me flinch. But if you pick up the toys from the floor one night, so I don't have to do it... That will matter more to me than all the jewelry in the world.
Okay, now...
But a man might say, hey, I put a nice ring on my wife's finger, I put a nice jewelry, then everyone will know how much I need.
Okay, I want to ask you a question. So, bottom line, you've been pushing this point, how well does it work? Telling the people in your life what you want, how well does it work?
I think it works most of the time, but people see things differently.
They still don't get the message. Years and years and years. Let me tell you something. What you get is 99% of the time. What you get is grudging. I'll do it. And it might enhance the quality of life temporarily, but it's certainly not enhancing the depth of connection and relationship.
Everything for another person, or for God, or for whoever you want to say you're doing it for, and then not necessarily is the person going to click and say, hey, she's doing it for God, and I'm going to do it for God. Unless they may just say, oh, she's in a better mood today. It's,
obviously you're supposed to communicate. Obviously, I'm talking about...
If you give a class now, all over again, and her husband,
right.
Men came, we don't know.
Well, I would give them the same class.
That's what I'm saying, right? If
was there at 9, we went home, and the men came for the second. So, would your husband come home with the same message from his pastor? I mean, he's saying the same thing to both parties, and you're saying that we hear it, and perhaps they don't hear the same.
I'm just saying
they don't look
the same way. The man walks in and sees a kid with a dirty diaper. He says, "Here, the baby stinks."
Okay. Now, yeah. Okay. Let's move along to the.
To go back to the Inyan Klali of the Shia Feyula that you mentioned, you said in other ways, you said that we are really holding the goal, and I'm investing, you didn't say that, and I'm investing, to just let go from the galus, the Ula will be here, because we are there. We are, there is a resistance, and if you just let go, it will be here.
Right.
You could just elaborate that one, so interesting, because I feel that what is happening here has to do with this big thing that go into the small things, because if you just let go, it is here, and see how we're going to handle the fact that Ben Yehuda and the Shuk and whatever and Hebron and they are killing and whatever, but if Yehuda is here, just open your eyes. So it's for God, but how are we going to do with the dishes and whatever and the debuts and with the alcoholism that we heard? It's all the same kinds of things that we need. The same thing. So
okay, to go into the whole geula issue.
We can't let go.
To go into the whole geula issue and elaborate on, I could elaborate on this for a great deal of time. I've given many tens of classes on this and related topics. So I don't really think that at this point we can really afford to go off at 11:40 into a whole. I understand. It is the same thing, and that's why I brought it in. But basically, if you go through, really, every single issue and every single situation that we're right now enduring in Golis, basically, even if you just look at the situation in Eretz Yisrael, basically, what's the situation in Eretz Yisrael? The situation in Eretz Yisrael is the very same exact situation. You have Jews in a situation who are, the way that Jews were meant to survive in Golis was by appeasement. That is the way that we were supposed to survive in Golis. And in fact, there are very strong warnings in the Gemara against trying to start revolutions and rebellions. We're supposed to go through appeasement. We're supposed to, if the Goyim want to persecute us, we're supposed to try to buy them off. We're supposed to try to sweet talk them. That is the traditional Golis approach to dealing with our enemies, according to Torah. This is what Torah says. Only in a situation, in individual situations where our enemies actually encroaching on our territory, and we have the possibility of pushing them away through military means, then we have the right to use military means even while we're in exile. But otherwise, basically, our whole approach of surviving in exile, according to Torah, was appeasement, buying them off, trying to get them to like us. Okay. Now, so, however, the Rebbe came along, the Rebbe said, those days are over. You're not supposed to deal with the same exact situation. The way you would have dealt with it in Golis, that's not the way you should deal with it now. Now you should say to them, listen, we're the chosen people. God gave us the land, and sorry, we don't have the right to give it away. It's not, you know, God gave it to us, it's not ours to give away. So we'd love to get along with you, and we'd love to deal with you very nicely, and we'll try to be as friendly with you as we can, but sorry, it's just not up for discussion. We can't buy you off this time. And for many people, because especially, and even people who are called Gedolei Torah and Gedolei Yisrael, they say this is ridiculous. This is going against all traditional ways of dealing with our enemies. Traditionally, the way we do is appeasement. We buy them off. And the Rebbe is, so what's their problem? Their problem is that they can't relate the fact that the Rebbe is, and not only that, the Rebbe shows by example that when we stand strong, things are good. And when we give in, things are bad. In other words, that not only Al Pi Torah did the reality change, but in the physical world, the reality has changed. But you have to open your eyes to that new reality. And the problem is that people are so entrenched in their old realities that it's hard for them to let go.
Let go of what?
Let go of your sense of being in Golis, and that you have to bow down to the guy, and you have to buy off the guy. Let go. You don't have to anymore.
But, so you have said, so, well, so what I'm trying to find out from you is the whole opinion is let go and open your eyes because Moshiach is here. He came, whatever,
I can take it to every topic. I'm just giving.
Are we holding the revelation of Mashiach because we don't let go and we don't open our eyes? Because if we just open our eyes and let go, it will be here. There is some kind of event that still has to come, or everything happened already.
Okay, so there's two things. So there's two. Okay, so the question is, what do we still have to do to make the Geula a reality? If it's a red, okay. The answer is that we definitely have to do it, because the Rebbe said very explicitly that, you see, traditionally, everything is backwards now. Traditionally, the way we saw the picture was that that the Jews want the Geula, and the Amish is not ready. That's traditionally the way, and therefore, you dive and you cry, you beg, the Amish is not ready, the Jews want it. That's the problem. The problem is the Amish is not ready. The Rebbe came along and touched it on Aleph and Beis, and the Rebbe did a little reverse. And the Rebbe said like this, the Amish is ready. The Amish is ready.
He said everything is ready.
There's a sikha of Chav Chasim and Tavshin and Aleph, where the Rebbe says that the Amish is ready. The problem that the Amish has is that he created the world in such a way that his plans for the world are dependent on the Jewish people. That's how the Amish created the world. He put himself in a situation where he is now dependent on the Jewish people. So even though the Amish is already ready, he needs the help of the Jewish people. Kivayah. What does he need? This is what the Rebbe says. It's a totally amazing statement. What does the Amish need already? The Amish says what he needs is that a Jew should want, a Jew should agree, and he should proclaim and publicize that not only is the Geula imminent, but it has already arrived. What kind of statement is that? Just follow the statement. In plain, simple English. The Amish needs that a Jew should want, agree, proclaim, and publicize that the Geula is already here. What does that mean? In order for the Geula to happen. What does that mean? It's such a contradiction of terms. It's mamish. It sounds like but it sounds like a nonsensical statement. But because we're used to looking at things backwards, the Rebbe is saying that the Amish is ready. What he wants you is to accept what's already here. The Rebbe is saying the whole world is backwards now. That the Amish is waiting. Before, the Jew was waiting for the Amish to give in and finally send the Geula, and now the Amish is waiting for the Jew to give in and finally accept the Geula that's here. Totally backwards. But that's the Rebbe says it, black and white.
Is that
Kavchet Sivan? That was a month later.
Oh. Okay.
2 months later. Okay.
The point about that I said that, say, Shraga David, or even this woman's husband, he cleans up his room because I ask him to. It truly doesn't bother him if there are things on the floor. So isn't that another possibility besides husbands or whoever not liking to have expectations made of them? Isn't that another valid reason why her husband left a lawnmower on the floor for weeks on end? He didn't care. That's a legitimate perspective.
The question is, why is he being a little more sensitive to her?
Well, that's where she's getting at, where somebody else said, where you have to make your desires known, so that if somebody really doesn't care if it's cluttered, you could tell them that you do care.
I was disagreeing with the point of making your desires known. Of course, how does everyone know what to do for the other if they don't know what they ever want?
Well, that was another question. How do you communicate your desires and your wants and your needs in this framework?
But the concept here was not...
Not obvious. How?
You're saying that you have to constantly make... You have to constantly demand what you want. Not constantly wandering, going, whatever, you don't get it. So I was trying to explain that you can work to a point where obviously you don't demand, you don't ask, you don't...
Well, that's what I want to know. How does that fit into this framework?
Of course you do, but you do it in the context of positive, in other words, in the context of... we're in this together, not in the context.
So doesn't that get back to deals?
I'm holding on to my turf, my territory.
That get back to deals?
No, it's
you
not
don't
good.
Like clutter. I don't care. But for you, I'll do it.
In other words,
that's a deal.
No, no.
And then maybe there are things that I don't like that you don't, you know, and we do for each other. That this just goes back to the same learning to get along with each other, and you compromise and you cooperate. What's the difference?
Because it's all the, yeah, it's the same idea that I was saying. I said in different words as what I said at the time, Machachan. The idea is, both sides giving 100%. Not 50-50. The idea is that...
Win-win.
Okay. I'm giving 100%. And I will let, and I will greatly appreciate, and I will greatly and gracefully accept your 100%. And I will let you, and I will let you know where you could direct your 100%, because I assume that you want to give 100%. But I'm not going to hold it against you if you're not giving 100%, because I don't look at you that way. As I look at you as a person who, what you really want to do is you really want to give your 100%, and I want to give you the opportunity for that.
What if it's clear the other person doesn't?
That's not true.
It's a nice assumption.
It's not true. The other person's ever, but that's not reality. Reality is every person does, but they are afraid.
I mean, that's, well, that's the basis of the whole.
The whole thing is everyone
cheer,
else.
Right? That's the assumption.
Well, everyone else does, but they're afraid. They're afraid that because they're coming from a dog eat dog world, and they're afraid to let go of the old survival mechanisms for gullus, and just let go.
This idea that you said about expectations earlier, where you said it's more of a men's gullus issue.
What?
You had said earlier in this chair that this might be more a thing with men, with expectations and running from the expectations.
Well, not wanting to be
now,
swallowed up.
Now, if it's more of a men's issue, then it does come back to the woman. Right? It ends up sitting in her lap, where even though he's running from expectations,
you have to lay his... There's no question that the kind of... One second.
It does end up in the women's department,
women have
as
different, no,
usual.
No. If I would sit with a group of men, what I would say to the group of men is, I would say, listen, there are differences. And one of the differences is that the women have a tremendous fear that the fear that they still hold on to is that if I am not needy, and if I don't express my neediness, then I won't get, and I won't be taken care of. Okay. What happens?
Supposedly, men like filling their wives' needs.
Yeah, but you know what happens is?
They like to feel needed.
Yeah, but
right?
You know what happens is? It goes the other way. It sometimes backfires. There are men who are afraid that their wife's neediness will either A, consume them, okay, or they'll feel trapped by it, or they'll feel that they somehow there are people who have this converse reaction where they feel that if they give in too much, then they're losing control.
So I mean, women have to be very clever, and it's back to
no,
their
both.
Core, and they have to be needy, but not too needy, so the men should feel needed, but not put upon.
No. The man is the other way too. So a woman has her fears, so a man has to allay the woman's fears through, in other words, each one divided sexes. It used to be there's a mashpia and a makabel, okay? So the system works is that the mashpia, the makabel has to show need in order to awaken in the mashpia the desire to be mashpia. That is how the system was built. And therefore, and as I explained in the Machachana thing, therefore that person gave his daughter the bracha should always have something to complain about. But the idea was that a woman has to be, you know, and therefore, and the Gemara said, and you find one Gemara that says that a person who has bread for today, it says, well, I eat tomorrow, shows lack of faith. And another Gemara says that a woman who has bread for today and doesn't have bread for tomorrow, for her children will scream like a Christus. So what does it mean, women don't have faith? That's to put the two Gemaras together. It's no, that a woman, you know, she is sensitive to her need, and by extension to the needs of others. And therefore, if she's, you know, if the neediness of her children
It's something that is not going to, you know, let her rest, and she'll always, and then she's going to experience that neediness and that sense of need in a very powerful struggle. Okay, Chassidus explains that the real tachlis of a makabel is not a makabel. That more than what the balabayas gives the ani gives the balabayas. That really a makabel is not a makabel. The panemius, a makabel is also a giving. And forget, the makabel gives even more. It gives the mashpia an opportunity to give. So what happens is, so bichetzenius, it's a makabel, it's a needy being. It's lacking and needy, and therefore it's coming because I need and I lack. Bipanemius, no. Bipanemius is a part of God that's giving, that's creating an opportunity that there should be giving in the world. So really, Bipanemius, they're also only interested in giving. So I have to learn how to relate to your Panemius and feel comfortable expressing my Panemius, and you have to learn to how to relate to my Panemius and feel comfortable expressing your Panemius. So we're still different. One is a, but the panemius is, it's really all the same thing. It's really all 100% giving. So the thing is, to relate to that, to make that your reality. And to relate to the other way, one that way, each one in their different way, to relate to the other one that way, which helps bring it out in them. When someone relates to you that way, when someone relates to you like, wow, you're this really great person that wants to do all these really great things. If it's being that you really are, it's just deep down. That helps bring it up.
We were talking about the other week about, I said, Hashem has expectations.
Mm-hmm.
And it's never good enough. Or for the Rebbe, you do, and then the Rebbe says that you're happy you did that. Mm-hmm. How about doing more?
Yeah.
And I don't know, you were telling me.
Bechetzainis, it looks like. That
it never ends.
Right. Bechetzainis, it looks like.
And you don't think Shluchim feel guilty? You don't think they're made to feel guilty? So is that.
Of course they do, because they misunderstand the nature of the relationship. We all fall into that trap.
And don't you want to withdraw and say, and throw in the towel?
Right, because you're
afraid.
Because again, it's the same thing. It's my fear of.
I can never reach the goal because the marker is always put a little bit further.
I can never reach the goal. My fear is that if I give myself over entirely to God, to the Rebbe, then what will be left for me? The one will make me. I won't be me anymore. The answer is, what's the mistake? In other words, it's yashas, it's ego, it's.
I'm a more goal-oriented person, and
no
my problem with it is that there is no goal, because you reach it, and then there's
a new one, or it's
made more difficult,
no,
or
again,
higher,
again,
so you never end.
Again, your need for a goal is an ego-based need. If you're egoless, if my mitzvah belongs to God, I don't make me, God makes me. So I'm not the one, since I don't make me and God makes me, so whatever me is belongs to Him, so that's it. It's His.
It doesn't matter.
Sure, it's His. I'm not me. I'm not me as an independent entity. I'm me as an extension of the ultimate me. So it's like, hey, well, whatever, wherever. You know what I mean? Let's do it. What do you want? My whole existence is your will, so that's it. That's all there is your will. It only feels to me like this my will besides that. Okay, but that's the concealed. So the question is, you're saying that deep down, really all I have is your will. Okay, but that's frightening to me. The idea of, so that I won't be me anymore. I'll only be you.
You're consumed.
Yeah, so this. So there's a little that fear of letting go. But you're not consumed.
I think it's wouldn't you agree that it's a more American modern day problem? Years ago,
no,
when people had the Tsar and the King and they were really subjects of him, we are raised on independence.
What?
And we need our space.
What? Well, that's why the Rebbe says you have the the various different diseases that we have today are diseases that are more coming from the fact that people have larger egos, they're more independent, they take more of the burdens and pressures of life on themselves, they take more of the, well, no question about it.